these are all the sort of fly. Don't hit any buttons.
Up until May of this year, I was chief of that training consultant to take Queensland online and unit of the Centre for Innovation Development. I can no longer hold that position. I am now E-Learning Australia. I left because I didn't want to keep doing what I do, being independent. But also because my contract ran out, Take Queensland Online has been pulled out, put away. And I really didn't know nobody could tell me what was going to happen to me in September this year, so I thought, let's make it easy for everybody, and I'll go out there and do my thing. And what we do with E-Learning for professional development for the vet sector, Education Queensland, Higher Education, I work with Central Queensland University, which is served by those in Australia, served by those in New South Wales, and little RTOs who can't afford lots of resources and lots of learning management stuff. We run a platform where small RTOs can share that platform. And the price we use in Jen has signed it, that's really wonderful. And the guys that help deal with it. And this is the first of what I hope will be a whole lot of sessions that come to Cairns, so that regional and remote people get to see and hear real people, not just video images. And as long as I can keep supporting that, I will, but I need to get the support of the people on the ground to actually come to those things, because I don't get to find the audio paper out of my pocket. So we can do the cost recovery, which is what we've done this time. That's really good, and we can keep doing that. And I thought, no better person to kick this off than Stephen Down. So when Stephen said he was coming to Queensland, I asked him very nicely if he would do the Mooloola Barbie. And the bride was a day at Stephen Australia's Mooloola. And he was quite keen to come to Cairns, so that wasn't a problem. As long as he could get out to the region, he'll do that tomorrow. So it's with great pleasure that I introduce you to Stephen Down. The thinker, he's the person who provides us with the resources. He's the person who, I believe, delivers their learning in the way it should be delivered. Provide people with the knowledge resources, guide them along the path, give them an idea of what it's all about and tickle their taste buds so they go off and actually start to look and learn for themselves, and then let them do the work. And as a paper, and I don't think I got it off your website. Pell's paper on the principles of e-learning facilitation. And one of his principles is let the learners do the work. Learn to let go. Let them do it. And Stephen embodies that philosophy. So let's let him get underway, because it's never running late, but we can't say that. So would you like to welcome Stephen Down?
Well, let's follow up that principle, and we'll have you guys do the talk. I'm just kidding. This is the strangest thing. I work with a lot of technology in that, and I've always come to fear the words, right? You know, like something's going strange with the computer, and call in the tech people, and the tech people come in and they say, never seen that before. I've never seen that before. So we're going to do this talk by strobe. Fortunately, I do have the other computer here, but I wanted to have this one up and running, and in between the dark bits, you should be able to see, maybe eventually, the recording thing going on here. I do want to tell you that I am recording my talk. So I consider it like harvesting content, because I don't really write. I write a lot, as people who read my site will attest, but I don't really write. Writing is really hard work. Writing well is even harder work. And so I do as little of it as I possibly can. And when I do it, I write differently than a lot of people. It's just stream of consciousness. And this is from my days at the University of Calgary, working for the student newspaper there. And, you know, you have a deadline. The deadline's at 5 o'clock, and the meeting or the event is at 3 o'clock. And so you've got 15 minutes to write an article that 20 or 30,000 people are going to read, and you learn how to write it correctly the first time. You learn the hard way. There are more than a few things that I wrote that I really wish I hadn't. But it worked for me, and actually it worked well enough that I started writing my university essays that way. So, just sit down, 30-page paper, well, okay. It's going to be a page every 15 minutes. So 30-page paper was 30 divided by 4, so it's 7.5 hours. Paper's due at 9, it's midnight. Take a break at 3 o'clock and watch some TV, and otherwise I'm away to the races and sit down and type my paper. So you might think it's an odd skill to have, and it is an odd skill to have, and people are like all wowed and amazed by it, but really, I mean, everybody knows how to talk, and if you had to talk, with just your friends in the pub or something like that, you'd have no problem. You don't rehearse to go into the pub and talk footy or whatever, you just... Is that a parrot? Okay. Not only is this the first strobe presentation I've done, this is also the first time I have talked to a parrot. It's learning to talk. Well, if you're a parrot, you do have to rehearse before you go to the pub and talk footy. But typically you don't, right? And you know what you're talking about. You go on and you just talk, and you just see that kid on what's his name? Yeah, he broke his cheekbone, whatever. He's not going to play. Well, he could play if he had the will. Hockey players play with broken cheekbones all the time. I don't see why these wimps can't do it. I'm just kidding. I love footy. And it's the funniest thing. I mean, I learned how to public speak in grade school, in public school. I'm a product of the public system. And sometimes my roots show. So I learned how to public speak, and I learned the school way, right? And you write out your talk, and you have your little cue cards and things like that, and you have your carefully planned structure and things like that. My very first talk that I did publicly was the story of Banting and Best. And Banting and Best are great Canadian heroes in the field of medicine. Between the two of them, they came up with insulin and saved the lives of who knows how many diabetics, or at least made the lives longer, which I guess amounts to the same thing. And so there was a little workbook, and I cribbed from the workbook, and I assembled it all together, and I did this talk, and it was like our school, our public school, is right, kindergarten to grade 8, and I was in grade 5, and I did this talk, and I won, and I had a career. And I did okay, but for me the big difference, the big thing for public speaking came, just as an aside, none of this was actually part of the talk. The big change for me came when I was in university, and this by now I'm at the University of Alberta, and I'm pursuing PhD studies. Which is a long and sad story, and we won't get into that. Safe to say, history has proven me right. Unfortunately, you don't get documents for that. But we'll leave that aside, too. And I read a book by a sometime Canadian politician, sometime chair of the Canadian Radio and Television Commission, sometime president of CBC, a guy by the name of Keith Spicer. He wrote a book called Winging It. And you know, I look at a book called Winging It, and already I know I'm in the right territory. And the whole idea of this book was how to speak in public without notes. And really is pretty simple. What you do is you take the topic. You know, first thing is you try to talk about something you know about. That really helps. Although it turns out to be optional. And I've proven this many times. I did a talk this morning, the roles and responsibilities of managers. Don't know anything about that. Didn't slow me down a bit. And you take your talk and you who are being homeschooled, listen to this, because this will really help you a lot when you're doing talks, and also when you're trying to write something against a deadline. And I see your teacher right beside you there. Don't let her listen to this. This will be your secret. You see him trying to cover the ears. Take your talk, whatever your topic is, and split it into three. And there's lots of ways to split things into three, right? The old standby, chronologically, right? This is the way it was before. This is the way it is now, and here is the road forward. And I've pulled that stunt a dozen times if I've done it once. All right? And you always see that. It's the old standby. You get the executive, whatever. Here is the history of our institution, and now here we are. We're the best in the world. They're always the best in the world. And here is the road forward. There are other ways to divide it. You can divide it up geographically, right? Here's what's happening in the world, here's what's happening in our country, here's what's happening in our community. All kinds of ways to divide things into three. So you divide your thing into three, and so now you have three things. You look at each one of these three things, and you divide that into three. There's 3 points about whatever it is that you're talking about. So the way it was, right, here's the way it was. Well, back in the history of Canada, we had the National Railway, we had Confederation, which is the organization of the provinces, and we had a lot of diversity, which meant that nobody got along. And that's where we started from, and that's how we've evolved the system that we've evolved. Those of you who are at the breakfast meeting are probably recognizing that. And so now, you take each one of these things, and if you can't come up with 3 points for each of your three divisions, talk about something else. No matter what it said on the program, talk about something else. So now you've got 9 points. If you've got 9 points, and those are pretty easy to remember, you can't miss with those 9 points. You easily remember those off the top of your head, and then, as they say, you riff on each point for 1, 2, 3 minutes, depending on how long your talk is. So I'm going to talk about the history of the Canadian Railway. I can do that for 10 seconds. We needed a train. We got one. Or I can do that for, 15, 20 minutes if I have to. And I'll just say everything I know about the Canadian Railway. And it doesn't matter at that level how organized it is, because I've got my 9 points. My talk will be beautifully structured no matter what. And that works. And then over the years, I've done a lot of talking. I've adapted from that. One of the things that I like to do is find themes and sub-themes and weave these themes and sub-themes through. And most of the time when I talk, I have no idea what these themes are going to be. They emerge. They come out of the talk. And, when I do a talk, I have a dialogue, even though all of you are just sitting there listening. And I see the people looking at the ceiling waiting on when will the talk begin. And I see the people following along. The dialogue is happening, as you all know, because you're all teachers. But what's the point of this? Well, the point of this, is that for the most part, I taught myself to talk. The public speaking is basically something I learned on my own, grabbing a bit of things here, a bit of things there. And it's stuff I drew from my extracurricular activities at university, working on the Gauntlet, which is the student newspaper. It's giving talks and so on. And it's throwing myself into the fray. Read Spicer's book, I'm all enthused. And this is it. So the very next talk I was scheduled to do, I was president of the Graduate Students Association at the time, and therefore by fiat, a member of the Board of Governors of the university. And if you think that was fun, it was, because there were all these, businessman has an interest in real estate, businessman, me. And it was a little odd. So anyhow, as the president, did she leave anything behind? Is she coming back? Is that yours or hers?
It's mine.
Rats. I decided to, so I'm all enthused, and my next talk is in front of convocation, and they put it in what's called the Northern Alberta Jubilee Auditorium. It seats 4,000. I thought, great, that's a good spot to try this. So I did, because the worst that could have happened is I could have failed, and since they're not armed, I'm fine. Actually, it turned out well, and and then along came PowerPoint. I've sort of gotten away from that, although this tour is bringing me back to that, which is really nice, and I really enjoyed doing it. But the point here is, again, I don't want to say self-taught, because of course that wouldn't be true. I did receive some basics when I was in grade 5. The basics only got me part of the way, but I also got the book. But mostly it's practice, it's immersing myself in real life, it's teaching myself, learning how to learn, how to be a good speaker. And in fact, every time I give a talk, I learn something new. Like, for example, don't use strobe, and talk slowly and clearly to the parent. Oh, we're back. Do we have...
Well, we have a choice. It's the connection into your laptop, because it's not got any screws. So we can either... If you're all on the internet, we can use the network.
Yeah.
Or we can plug in another data show and put on a table.
Oh, that's way too much work.
So we can just use the network if you've got your...
Yeah, a lot of my stuff is just off the website, so I'll be fine. And then any slides that I show, I'll just stroke them. Oh, well, I'll just unplug it, and lo and behold,
go ahead.
And we're up and running.
And I have the key.
No. Oh, I already have net access. I'm already on. I'm online.
It's PMS, not streaming. It's online now.
See, that computer is already connected
there.
And running. It's under her account.
Okay.
So
that's, well,
it's
that,
only, that's yeah. The only...
We can connect here. It up to another data show.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, maybe during the break, why don't we do that just in case, because there is a slide or two that I may want to do. So, to get to the point of this, and I'm finding that I'm wandering more and more and more as I do these talks, but my work since then, my work in the actual field of learning design and instructional technology and all of that, sort of began more or less 10 or 15 years ago. I kind of fell into it by accident and sort of grew over time. And what I've done almost practically since the beginning of this, and certainly explicitly in the last 3 or 4 years, is to try to emulate or instantiate the type of education that I think that e-learning should be striving toward, as Chris said in the introduction. And I draw from the experiences like my learning how to public speak and things like that as a foundation for that. A lot of people say, and I heard it, in fact, even on the Sunshine Coast, even in Canberra just recently, if you put the student in control of education, if it becomes learner-directed, well, what happens to the curriculum? How do you make sure that they need to know what they need to know? And my response to that is, there is evidence that self-directed learning can work, and the evidence is that it does work. It has certainly worked in my own case, and I see evidence of it working all over the place, where people acting on their own initiative learn for themselves. The entire internet is built by self-directed learners. There were no classes in how to build a worldwide information network. Didn't exist. But the people who build the internet learned how to do it as they went along. And if you look at the internet, especially, I spend a lot of time in these tech communities and the development communities, and you know, with all the geeks and the nerds and the whatever, and there's massive self-development activity happening there. And you look at places like IBM's DevShed, you look at places like Web Reference, you look at places like Slashdot, where these learning communities have developed spontaneously in a very much unorganized fashion, where people are teaching themselves in a community, supporting each other how to learn. What's her name? Erin Brewer gave a talk in Utah. Erin Brewer works with David Wiley, who those of you who are interested in learning objects will recognize the name David Wiley. Gave a talk about spontaneous learning communities that evolve in Yahoo groups. And one of the examples was beekeepers. You know, I suppose you can take a class in beekeepers. I understand, or beekeeping. I understand they don't teach that in public school. Although they should. I think that would be fun in grade fives and bees. It's a natural. never mind. But talked about the way the community supports. And it's interesting and fascinating, particularly against the background of e-learning the way it's going today, with pre-structured classes, learning management systems, learning design. And one of the things that Brewer observed, and this she studied four of these groups in detail. The only one I remember off the top of my head is beekeeping, but the rest are on my website. And what happens is, person is working in this field, they want to raise bees and teach them to go to flowers. It turns out bees do that naturally, but they don't know this. So they log on to this and they do something. Right. Okay, that one I can handle. I know about that one. I have seen that before. And they log on to the forum and they ask a question. And what follows is not simply the provision of the question, but a process of what's called knowledge negotiation, whereby the person who has the answer asks the person who asked the question why they need this knowledge. And then a process of negotiation follows. A conversation happens, and the context of the need is made clear to the person providing the information, and they're able to shape the information and select the information appropriate to what the learner actually needs. And this is self-directed learning. And people have this idea in their head that, you know, learner-centered learning, self-directed learning means, you know, abandoning all help whatsoever. It's you, the computer, and Google, and away to the races you go. But that never happens. Self-directed learning is learning that is guided, that is supported, that is helped, that is promoted in certain ways, and yet nonetheless remains in the control, in the hands of the learner. So, I live in this environment. I've lived in this environment since, like I say, 1987. I've learned to program in this environment. I have utterly no qualifications as a programmer. And if you stick all the way through to the afternoon, you'll see that I have, in fact, learned how to program a little bit. I have utterly no qualifications in most things, actually. My degrees are in philosophy, which people say qualifies me for absolutely nothing except to teach other philosophers. I don't think that this is true, but you see my point. So what I've done, explicitly, by design, this is my version of learning design, is to try to instantiate these principles on my website, as Chris said. I think of the work that I do online as online learning. And I am a quote-unquote online instructor or online teacher or online designer. Of course, I approach all of these roles very differently than a person who's working with courses and programs and structure and marks and things like that do. Now, let me stop here just for a sec and find out where we're at in the sense of whether people have seen this or not. How many of you have actually visited my website ever? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, most of you. How many of you are horrible? No, never mind. Yeah. Well, that's good. Then most of you already know what I'm talking about. So I'm just going to step lightly through. Okay. Now, as I say, this is learning design. This is my course, my school, if you will. And it's distinct from traditional learning in that there is no cohort, there is no class, there's no start date, there's no end date, there are no grades, nothing like that. But there is very explicitly instruction. Now, if you look on the site, and it's kind of interesting, I redesigned the site, and then the Poynter Institute's iTrack 3 study came out, and sometimes intuition works, because the design of the site fits perfectly with iTrack 3. I just love it. iTrack 3, basically you would start, you see where it says educational blogging? That's where people start to look at the page. It doesn't matter what the page is, that's where their eyes will go first. Then, the eyes will go up to the upper left. And my guess is the reason why they do that is because that's usually where the directory is. The Poynter people say, well, the eyes are going there anyways, don't put a directory there, put the directory somewhere else, or put some content there or something. I'm thinking, no, because that's why they look there. They're looking for the menu. And that's where they expect to find it. And then, oddly, bizarre, who would have figured? So the eyes go up there, and then zing, down here. And it, as it turns out, right to where my website says community. And then, it's sort of, it's just a zigzag from there. Pictures, in print, in the world of print, pictures attract readers like flies. In fact, there's a whole discipline on how to organize and arrange the pictures on a printed page, up to and including the directionality of the picture. And you see the perspective, and that gives the picture a direction. If you have somebody looking in print, if a person is looking at something, the reader will take a look to see what the person in the picture is looking at, which is really kind of silly when you think about it, but that's what we do. So you have the person in the picture looking at the headline you want them to read. Old print trick. On the web, pictures don't register that way. Pictures aren't heavy on the web the way that they are in print. So that's why the things like banner ads and things like that don't work, because people tune out the picture. Now, you can catch their attention if you make the picture big enough, but it's only a fleeting sort of attention, and it's not a deep kind of attention. So I got lucky with the design. But the first three things I hit are the three major parts of the website. And I had a mantra. I don't use it so much anymore, but I still believe it. Knowledge, learning, community. And those are basically the three elements on the site. My problem right now is I'm not sure which one is which. But the thing right at the start, I guess, is knowledge. This is where the meat of the site is, the content. Educational blogging is the current big paper that I have out. It's a large piece I wrote for EDUCAUSE Review. Have any of you read that? Educational blogging. It's an essay I wrote in EDUCAUSE Review. Oh my! Well, now I've got a topic for after the break. Anyhow, and then today's news, of course, That's the set of articles from my newsletter, and I really should be careful and read my newsletter before I use it in a presentation. The learning projects, and I've reorganized this into projects and collaboration and research, and those really are the index things. And you know, like if we zip into research, for example, now we're going to get to a menu of a lot of stuff. Well, we're going to get there eventually. Right. Opening page. People have asked me several times on this trip, what does Australia need more than anything else?
Bandwidth.
Bandwidth.
You're not telling us nothing.
Yeah.
Especially that we've got a huge fight to get it this far.
Oh, yes, I'm impressed.
There's been a lot of energy expended.
My goodness.
That is slow, though. Is that the network?
I don't know what that is. Maybe it turned off when the screensaver came on or something. Well, pretend that we've gone to the next page. That's okay. I mined my slides for the morning presentation, so I'm very flexible. I'm a flexible learner. Anyhow, the research takes you to a whole bunch of research categories. Everything I put on my site, absolutely everything, gets dumped into a research base, and the research base is organized by categories, it's organized by publisher, it's organized by author. What's important for me anyways is I don't do any of the work for this. My research base organizes itself completely automatically. So, and there it is. Now I don't know what to say about it anymore. But this is the learning component. If somebody wanted to come into my site and do some directed research or whatever, this would probably be the place to go.
So, Justin, when you say it organizes itself automatically, what do you mean?
Yeah, and with that question, I should add, because I forgot to do it at the start, do interrupt, talk, ask questions, phone your neighbors, whatever, during my talk. I haven't taught in a university class or anything for a long time, but when I used to teach in a university class, I would say to the students, I like a noisy classroom. I like a classroom that has chatter, because those are more interesting classrooms, and I'm learning more. Even if they're talking to their friends, I listen in. That's sneaky that way. So, self-organizing. This is not as self-organizing as I would like, but it's close. Certainly it does all the work for me. What I've done is I've come up with these categories. That's the part that's not as self-organizing as I would like. And then what happens is each category behind the scenes, and I'd flip you to the page, but we don't have the time. Slow bandwidth, I'm going to be snarky. I define each category as what is known as a regular expression in the world of Unix or Perl. A regular expression is kind of like keywords, and that's a good loose association to think of it as, but it's actually an expression in computer code that lets me very finely pick out words and phrases and things like that. So I have a category up there, say Google, and the things that match Google are not just the word Google, but Google, Gmail, AdWords, so on and so forth. And it lets me do stems so that I don't need entire words. So, like, it'll pick up Google and Googles and Google-like and anything with Google in it. And so I set this up as a regular expression. Some of them are quite long, but some of them are actually fairly short and simple. And what my software does, every time I submit a resource on the site, the system compares the resource, the description that I've entered, to the regular expression and then assigns it to a category. And then I just create little indexes of the categories. What I like about this, completely dynamic, completely flexible. I can add a category anytime. And again, if I had the bandwidth here, I'd show you an example of me creating a category on the fly. So I can add categories, I can adjust categories, I can look at the output of categories and tweak it anytime I want. Very flexible, but mostly I just don't think about it. And it just does it all on its own, because that's the way it's supposed to work on the other side. That's what I mean by software. Now, if I was a really good programmer, what I would be doing is analyzing the input as it comes in, running it through a network, identifying clusters of related concepts, assigning those a name automatically, and presenting that as a result. But I'm not a good enough programmer to do that. I will be one day, he says, hopefully. Let's back up. Oops, this computer. The other part, and an increasingly important part of my site, is community. And I know to put community under community, it actually matches. And it's interesting. I haven't read the post on community yet, because I haven't had a chance to be online yet today. Virtual training, on show at networking. Hi, Mike. This is me reading my content for the first time, so you have to forgive me. Hi, Mike. The site has recently been updated, having been Russian. Well, okay. Oh, he must be responding to someone else. Okay. Never mind. I'm not going to read my community posts while I'm giving a talk. I think that might be a bit odd. But the idea is, in my newsletter, and you've probably seen it, every item actually has this sort of three-way connection. Refer, research, reflect. Refer simply allows you, when the software is working, which it's not at the moment for Internet Explorer users, heathen Microsoft, it allows you to send the resource to somebody else that you know. Research takes you to a version of my research area, but one that is organized specifically for the resource in question. And I'll just point that out to you. Like, all of you have been to my website, but how many of you have followed that research link ever? Now part of this talk is about the new student. And I thought I might actually get to that at some point. And one of the big differences that writers have observed between the new student and the previous generation, they learn about things like technology differently. Take a traditional learner, give them something new like Microsoft Word or some other piece of software, and the first thing they'll do is sit down with a manual and read the manual, or even better, they'll go take a course. New learners don't do that. New learners just hit every button they can find, and that's how they learn. And so it's interesting when I ask this group, how many of you have hit that? Now, that research button has been available for 3 years, and yet you haven't hit it. And I'm thinking, why not? It's a link. Why didn't you follow it? That's a great answer. That's the best answer I've ever heard. That's fascinating, isn't it? I have actually thought of merging this display with the main newsletter output. Now it increases the size of the newsletter and makes each item longer, and iTrack tells me that I'm good for 4 or 5 lines per item. 7 or 8 if I have a dedicated audience. And if you've looked at my newsletter, you see I assume I have a really dedicated audience. But that's about how much I'm good for. So I don't know about adding this extra content to it.
Did you actually put the link to the original article? Because sometimes I've gone in expecting to find the original article of your maybe summarizing.
Right.
And then I click on research and I get another one of your summaries. Where do I go? Do you provide links to the original articles if they're not on your site?
Yeah, it's right under the headline. If you click on, if you click here, or on the other page, if you click here, that takes you to the article.
So research doesn't.
Research? No, you see, the purpose of the
research.
Isn't that interesting? But if I did, you see, if I took you straight to the original article, then you wouldn't get the link to, well, great, I'll link to one of my own articles. Let me back up here. I'll pick. Well, no, I'll leave it on mine, although it's a little confusing. Like, here is find additional resources written by, and then whoever the author of the piece is, say it was Curtis Bonk. I just wanted to get a reference to Curtis Bonk in this talk, so I'm going to put it in here. Hi, Kurt. You click on the name, it takes you to all the resources written by that person. Find additional resources published in, and then I have lots of fun with this because, you know, I like to observe trends in publications, like the Chronicle of Higher Education. I have observed over the years is like really reactionary and to a large degree anti-technology, which is fascinating. How do you prove that? Well, you click on that link and you get all of these articles in my comment, and you can see the pattern of what the Chronicle does right out there. It's out there in the open. And then my categorization system that I talked about, there are also links to the categories. This particular item links only to the one category. But if you follow the category, in this case it's Microsoft, because once again I'm complaining about them. And unfortunately the display isn't the way it should be in the Internet Explorer. There should be a space between each paragraph. But here are all the items for the last, well, going back to about 1998 that I've written on this subject. All the links. So, and then...
And you're harvesting that one the same method.
Yeah. Yeah, and notice this was a lot faster because I've already created the index. So I'm just pulling from the index. So, and now, so, and this, I have like, I forget how many categories, a couple hundred categories. I actually tried organizing the categories. That was the research page that you saw there. Not completely pleased with it. The neat thing is, somebody wants a new category, I just add it to the list. Takes me nothing to do it. I add it to the list, it re-indexes for that category, I'm away to the races.
And so that's how it's going to
build. That's right. But this, and as an aside, this is not rocket science. You have people in your institution probably who can write this kind of code. This is regular expression matching across a database. Really, it's simple code, right? You create your regular expression, and then you go, each item in your database. Database, compare. If yes, add it to the list. If no, move on. Compare, add it to the list. Compare, add it to the list. Got your list? Go through each item in the list, show the record. There's like 20 lines of code, max. And people can code this in their sleep. This is not advanced code. People will come to you from various companies and talk about dynamic organization and taxonomies and information structuring and sell you a system for $200,000. This is 20 lines of code. Back when I coded this originally, I didn't have access to anything. So I wrote a database. And so this actually runs off my database backend. The database is just a flat text database, tab delimited with line feeds to separate records. Very simple database. But it would actually work better and more efficiently if I used a real database. And I am using a real database, MySQL typically. For some stuff, but it's funny because now that I'm using a real database, I'm tempted to use structured query language, which is the regular way everybody searches for stuff about from databases, and now all my searches just look like everyone else's, and they're no better than anyone else's, and now it's all ordinary. I can do so much more with regular expressions than I can do with SQL, so it's kind of funny. Better technology, worse result. But that's the story of my life. So next time you're at my site or reading my newsletter and you see something that interests you, in addition to just reading the article, click on the research link, because there's a whole wealth of knowledge. There's 7 years, 7, 98, no, 6 years worth of stuff there that I've done over the years. back to community. It's funny, for many years, my website broke one of my big, important rules. And it's funny because the iTrack 3 study came out again and confirmed this. And the rule is to integrate interaction with content. And I used to be so critical of learning management systems. I still am critical of learning management systems that keep these things separate. There are still many that do that. The idea here is that you have some content, whatever it might be, some instructional material, an article, an essay, whatever, and then you have interaction, like a discussion list or a chat or something like that. And the way learning technology was originally set up, and we're moving away from this, but it's originally set up where the discussion board area was almost like an add-on. If you remember, think of it. Probably many of the LMSs that you've looked at are still structured this way. You go in, you do your course stuff, you look at your learning object and all that, and then you go to the discussion area, and now you're going to discuss it. And the way I used to complain about that, and I still complain about that, it's like everybody coming in here, and I'll give you the lecture, and then we'll all get up and go over to the discussion room, and that's where we'll discuss it. It makes no sense. So I've always said, integrate the discussion right with the instruction. Right in the same page, in between the paragraphs even. The first time I was in Australia, in fact, I was working with Tim Van Gelder at the University of Melbourne, who was putting on a philosophy class online. It was interesting because I was invited to Melbourne, not because I knew anything about online learning or anything like that, but because he had seen a site of mine online called Stephen's Guide to the Logical Fallacies. And on the basis of that work, my philosophy work, who knew, I got invited to Melbourne. And what I did for Tim is I created a little application that inserted discussions in between the paragraphs. And the little application consists of a CGI script. It's written in Perl. That will accept the form input, toss it into a flat database, and then, if it's called slightly differently, we'll take the content from the flat database and display it. And the way I integrated the CGI script with the web page is I made the output of the CGI script into a JavaScript function. And then, as you were creating content, anytime you thought a discussion might be a good idea, you just insert a reference to this JavaScript function. And the JavaScript function will put a little input window up, the previous discussion, right there on the page. All automatically. You put it up there, you never had to think about it again. Worked beautifully. Worked fantastic. I don't know why I haven't used it in other areas, but that's a bit of an aside.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
We have a learning management system which allows you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so excited when I did my first course that I did exactly what you just said.
Right.
And I haven't done it since. And in fact, I've drawn right back to having it with a discussion forum over here.
Okay.
Because what happened was that the students are not a cohort of them. They're coming and moving through.
Sure.
And so someone has posted something in that insert, but they never go back to visit who else has been there because they think they've done it. And if you put that into a forum where they're going all the time, they're much more likely to notice that, oh, someone's responded to what I posted.
Right.
And I found that I had all these disparate, lonely conversations scattered through the pages rather than trying to make that sense of community. I lost it.
Okay.
It also gets very difficult for teachers to organise and to keep track of that sitting spread. Well, you can have it that it comes into your own email so that you can see it. So I've actually gone, and the course I'm teaching now, I've stepped so far back that I only have a course level discussion forum.
Right.
So that I know that everyone will come in, and it's a bit messy, but it's alive.
Yeah, okay. No. Yeah, can I just summarize this for the people on the microphone who didn't hear it? yeah, because I'm talking to two audiences here. The comment was that you used to put it in, but people would only ever go to a discussion once and then move on and never go back to it, and so it had to be put centrally. And then there was another comment to the effect that it also becomes very hard for an instructor to organize and manage the discussion when it's all spread out like that. Okay, bye people on the microphone. We'll go back to the comments now.
Oh, Junior, that's exactly that now, and you and facilitate the course that we run out of the room. But I don't manage the three little conversations the learners do. The part of their learning, a part of their task, if you want to call it that, is to facilitate the thread through that conversation, and that is for the whole length of the course. So within that topic, we will have a thread that runs through all of the learnings that we're doing and is set up so that the responses are emailed to them, so they know when someone's responded to them. And I'm finding it is probably, with some of the learners I have at the moment, the only thing that makes them use the discussion. Because what they said to me when we had the separate forum was, why do I have to leave here to go there?
So you've got the same forum inserted in many, many pages?
No,
no.
It's whatever it is that we're discussing, reflecting, collaborating and organising. So let's say we're talking about constructivism and taking a constructive approach. Within that page, for want of a better word, for that part of the course, there is a continuous discussion going, because people don't move from that topic to this topic and leave that one behind, because if you are thinking down the lines of independent learners and constructivist approach, it doesn't start in week one, finish in week one, go through the whole course. So they're continually moving back and reviewing and reflecting on this body of knowledge that they've used. And as they pick something else up, which might be in the section that talks about managing students, they will go back to that and say, well, you know, when
we
look
at this... That's no different to clicking on a side button that takes you back to the discussion group. The only difference is that you've got to step into, say, the first page.
And the comments coming back from the learners are, I can print that, I can track that, and I can watch the discussion evolve. Within that context.
But it's the same question. Like what we're talking about now is having a discussion group sitting in the context of the materials
and
the learning.
But not
so you would either have
meeting.
Yeah, but if you have to go back to the same page, it's no different, is it? The only way it would make, you know, follow that philosophy is if you had either the same discussion group or a series of different ones situated in the context of the learning on different pages. Otherwise, if you put it in a page at the beginning and expect it to go back, it's no different to having it on the navigation bar and going back to the same one, is it? So the principle is actually contextualising it and sitting
it,
putting it in situ with the learning material so that your activity, your discussion becomes part of
it. It's not a separate thing. It's in between the bits of the content.
There's a comment in the back.
So I wanted to ask a question because I'm not a teacher.
Right.
And I'll be at the ICD to have a different kind of teacher. So I'm picturing in my mind what I would be like if I was a learner, because I'd be picking on it. So can I ask, you're talking about having discussion boards, so I'm a learner and I see cases of plagiarism and blah blah. Actually, I want to say something quickly, here I go. And then later there'll be another one. So what Chris said is you've got something on constructivism, you've got something on managing students. I can make another comment relative to managing students or ask a question or whatever. And what else can say is that it's up to me to go back regularly and check to see, or you're saying you can email it to me and get me someone after this. Can I ask you, Steve, if you say that's correct?
Yep.
Let me flag that.
These email packages, do you remain like a teacher for the people who are going to use it? So you would come and check the discussion boards and ask the questions and...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I've got... If we look at my discussions... Now that there's been these kind of... I've got all kinds of things to say here, and I'll forget most of them, but I'll remember some of them. Which I guess is as much as I can hope. Whoops, that's not... There we go. this link, when we get to it, is my main discussion area. And there it is. And does it actually, no, it doesn't show a count. There are, I don't know, about 450, 500 discussion threads on there. And each of these discussions were originally created in the context of one of the links in much the same method that I just described with respect to Tim Van Gelder's thing. What I did actually is for my links, there is a reflect button. I've had people comment to me that the terminology research, refer, reflect is a little obscure. So I've taken to actually putting a little guide at the bottom of my email messages. I figure if I tell everybody what these things mean every day for the next year, they'll remember. But if you click on reflect, that takes you right into the discussion where you can add a post. And there you go. Similarly, ta-da, that's an input form. Similarly, if you look at one of my articles, because I also write longer articles. Oops, that's not one of my articles. That's something else. Didn't go far enough. There you go. Isn't it nice to see your project on the other website? All right, here we go. I'll go to Barbarian Inventions. Nobody liked this article. I'm so disappointed. But, well. And at the bottom, here's the comment on this article. You see the JJ, I'm testing formatting. And then the comments are right there. Now, so, yeah, this is tricky. This is not a simple thing. And we can't think of this as a simple thing. It's hard to do this. I know it's hard to do this because I've spent years putting this together. I've got all kinds of little mechanisms and tricks to help me. Well, the big trick that I did is on my main discussion page, we won't see this here. It's sad because I'm not logged in. But if you go to the main discussion list, any topic that has a new post in it, a little light bulb shows up. And then if you go into the topic, any post that's new, a little light bulb shows up. I was trying to think of what kind of icon I should use because nobody understands what icons are. People use icons in their navigation. I have no idea. I'm trying to run the televisions in this country, and I've got the clickers. And a half circle, a little loop under it. What could that possibly be? Pardon?
Rewind.
Oh, I wasn't using a VCR, though. You know, people don't understand icons, but I wanted an icon, just something that would catch their eye and that they could learn what it meant almost intuitively. And my wife suggested, use a light bulb. And I thought, nah. No, it won't work. It's the wrong color. It'll be too big. I used a light bulb. Works brilliantly. This shows you should sometimes listen to other people. So it takes me 5 minutes less to get caught up. Now, you know, if you have a high traffic board, it'll take you longer. But the idea is you're still going directly to the content. But there are even better tricks. But what I want to do, is there a marker? Yes, there is. No. Is there a cleaner? Here we go. Because I still want to go back to that original question. And because that original question gets right to the heart of the matter. It's exactly on the topic I want this first topic talk to be about. Think about the context now. We have our course. Here's our course. And what I said is embed the discussion right in the page. So let me make this a little bit bigger so we have something to work with. Here's our text page. Here's blah, 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 blah. Here's the content. Here's the little JavaScript function that I invented and got zero royalties on. But I'm not sorry about that. But somebody will come along and say, oh, we invented this. You owe us money now.
So anyhow, the little JavaScript, the page displays, it will show the little input form in the comments, and that links off, and here's the function running all by itself. Right? And so here's your course, it goes on, there'll be a few more discussions embedded. And the point was, and it's a very good point, is that somebody going through this course is only going to hit this discussion once. And then they won't go back to it. And I can take that even further. Even if they wanted to go back to it, how could they? It's lost. It's buried on page B7, Module 3, Lesson 42, Trigonometry Level 1. Right? Couldn't possibly go back to it. So the problem here is, but now, huge difference. Because I introduced this discussion by saying I'm breaking this rule, and I was for the longest time on my website, years, I did discussion over here, and I've done these neat kind of things to integrate the discussion into the links and into the articles and that. When I did my page redesign, which I did just before coming here to Australia, instead of preparing for my talks, I redesigned my website, which is the way my mind works. I knew I had to be really busy the week or two before I came here, so I redesigned my website, I added a wiki, and I got all kinds of stuff done. So I was busy. Anyhow, and what I did is I put the discussion on the front page of my website, right in the front page, right where everyone looks. And the frequency of posts, the level of activity has dramatically increased. And so there's that, and then the putting the little instruction at the bottom of the newsletter page, click reflect to comment. And just it's an order of magnitude more conversation on my website now. So, and the same with Tim's course, he found that these things were used a lot. The discussion embedded was used quite a bit. So, I think that there's something to that. I think that there's a lot to that. If you go out and you look at a lot of these resource-based websites, the DevSheds, the Ziff Davis, and all that, so on and so forth, they all put the interaction right there with the article. There is something to this. So why isn't it working in your case? Well, here's what I think is the answer. You're organizing your learning material as a linear course. So, of course, they never go back. Because once they're done, they're done. But the principle of e-learning that I'm trying to talk about here is a difference in the organization of learning materials themselves. And this does tie in to the talk about the new learner and people like, Tapscott and all of them. Many people talking about the way people in the internet generation, the digital generation, read and learn as opposed to the older text-based generation. The text-based generation, including sort of me, because I do this still to some degree, and probably many of you, because none of you clicked on the reflect link, even if it is slow, is that they don't read linearly. They don't learn linearly. They bounce around. Hyperlinks were designed for these people. They zero in on things that they want. They wander. They explore. They expect to have a multi-threaded, multi-dimensional, multi-faceted access to content. And if you present it to them one little bit at a time in an ordered sequence, they sort of go, God, no, spare me, take me now, I can't stand this anymore. They're really like, I'm like that. When I'm sitting in a lecture theater listening to somebody like me give a talk, I'm sitting there saying, oh, the bandwidth is so small, I need more content. I'm sitting there, I always want wireless in my lecture theater so I can actually do something while I'm listening to this talk. Because when you think about the informational bandwidth that's coming at you in a single linear session, even in a talk, it's incredibly slow. You're getting information from me at something like 300 baud here. And to somebody who lives you know, with 1 megabit per second information speed coming at them, 300 baud is nothing. These are people who grew up on MTV, and I asked in the other place, you do have MTV here, although I know it's not on my TV in the hotel. My TV in the hotel has about 15 channels, of which 9 or 10 of them are pay channels. And they show you the little preview, and then they cut out. I can just get into the movie and cut out. Dirty, horrible trick. But anyways, MTV flings things at you. If you look at what MTV does, it's images, music, graphics, words across the bottom of the screen. The new news, CNN, with the ticker bars. You look at Bloomberg News. I don't know if you have Bloomberg News here. There's like 3 or 4 different information tracks all on the one page. A person talking about the big story in an advertisement. All this multi-track. This is the rate at which the new generation expects to get learning. So linear is death to them. So by the time they're down here, there's no way going to go back, especially if they have to page back through every one of these pages, or even worse. And I've seen lots of instructional design like this, and somehow people have thought this is a good idea. Don't let them just navigate through the pages wherever they want. Structure them up so that they have to do a pretest first, and then do the objectives, and then do the first little bit of content, and then do the review exercise, and they won't let you hop pages. Nothing more frustrating that doing a search on Google, finding a link to the little odd obscure point of JavaScript that you're looking for, and you go to the site and it wants to give you a pretest. And I'm not here for a pretest. All I want to know, do I need a comma after that or a dot? All I want to know. But it does that. So, what's the picture then? What's the better picture? The picture that I use, and I use this explicitly, although this will be a new diagram for me. I've never drawn this diagram before, but I think it'll work. And we have a topic, and you access that topic, and then it spreads out. And you have another topic, and you access that topic, and it spreads out. And so on, right? And I guess the picture isn't coming just the way it was in my mind's eye, but... And interestingly, I've done a lot of thinking about knowledge, because I am a philosopher. Knowledge is structured this way. And you may have been taught once upon a time that knowledge is organized into neat categories, just like biology, species, genus, and so on and so forth. Turns out that's not even useful in biology, and for the most part, even in our day-to-day lives, we don't use information that way. We think cat. And the next thing we think when we think about cat isn't necessarily species feline, or going up or going down, domestic tabby, and that's the way we think about cats. We think about cats, we think, lock the cupboards, right? And we think, no mice. Our concepts don't sit there in neat hierarchical structure. Their contents are part of a web of knowledge. As W.V.O. Quine described it, the web of belief. So, and this is the organization of web pages that is useful to the new generation. So now what will happen if you think about this? Now, if we tie discussions to the pages. So here's our discussion, our tied discussion. And the way to think of a discussion, imagine this diagram, but only now in 3 dimensions. So we have a content layer, we have a discussion layer, we have a whatever layer. If you think of it in 3 dimensions, you're actually breaking out of some significant limitations here, because, you know, we think in our field of learning, right, you know, we'll have content, we'll have discussion. That's about the end of our field. But if you think, well, content discussion are two possibilities, and we can go further. Or quizzes. I forgot quizzes. I mustn't forget quizzes. Put the little quizzes there, too. Sorry, I don't think much of quizzes. But. Now, a person is accessing this, right? And again, now we're still thinking only of salvation. A person is accessing this. They're accessing this knowledge web at the point of need. So the person has, at any given time, in the context of whatever work or project that they're up to, they're accessing a point of need, and there's the handy-dandy discussion, right there where they wanted it. And they may come back to it, they may not. It's not, the idea here is, you don't structure and organize a conversation to have a beginning, to have a middle to it, to have an end. The conversation lives or dies, it has its own light. It has a light independent of any class, independent of any course, independent of any person. It just does its thing all by itself. You don't need to structure it. Now what it is really a user-contributed resource that got added to the stuff that you put in there in the first place. And the conversation itself, people want to localize things. You're having a conversation. We have to have the conversation in one place because that's how conversations work. The conversation will be here and here and here and here. If you have anything like a persistent identity, the people will talk back and forth across a wide variety of discussion topics. How do I know this? Where's the proof? The proof is in the world of blogs. Now, I'll talk more about blogs after the break, which will probably come very soon, right, Chris?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm talking about blogs after the break, but I'll say right now, blog conversations work this way. There is no location for a blog conversation. A blog conversation is a distributed entity. So, the other thing, and I'll talk about this in the context of blogs after the break too, is that navigating, going from one page to the next, is only one, and indeed the most primitive way of accessing an information web like this. Really, mostly, people don't navigate from page to page. If you look at the research on web use, yeah, there is some navigation, but most of it is goal-directed navigation. They go there. They don't come through here. They just go straight there. It's so much of a trend that there have been lawsuits and things like that about deep linking because people want to go straight to the story that they're after. So I think that's the answer that I would give to you on that. The problem isn't in the embedded discussion. The problem is the linear design of the learning resource.
And I don't know how... Gee, I hope all of that made it onto the tape. It's a good microphone. We'll see how good it was later.
Can I make some comments back to you?
Absolutely. This is not a one-way...
On the drawing that you've got on the board,
yeah.
That central where the cache is, I see that as a theme, and all those arrows going off are the individual pages. And what you've done is you've actually drawn the discussion to the central theme with all those pages off. And that's where I am now, at that central theme.
Sure.
And they do move from theme to theme. But it doesn't work having it out in a little arrow on the little satellite by itself. It becomes an isolated discussion which never people very rarely return to that little outpost.
But again, they don't have to return. The conversation is distributed, first of all. Secondly, There's no center. There's no starting point. I forget where I read it. I think it was Fire and Ice, some design site. Every page is a start page. Every page is the home page. And that was one of the big things that prompted me to redesign my website. Every page on my website is the home page. I know I have a home page, and I just showed you it, but the idea is any... people will enter my webpage anywhere. There is no starting point on my website. They're all starting points.
So the idea here, cats is a theme, but it's at the same level. And the diagram is bad because it makes it look like cats is in the center, but it's not in the center. This is in the center.
They're all double-sided arrows.
Yeah, they're all double. That's thank you. Yeah, that's what you've done. They're all double-sided arrows. There's a lot of work that's been done in network theory with linking and bidirectional linking and things like that. Some of the work that I've done has had to do. If you've ever seen my referrer system, another one of these huge JavaScript tricks to try to make sure the arrow works in both directions.
I know you don't have to agree with this, but I'm throwing this out for you to think about.
We had a discussion this morning about people being able to be introduced to things when they're ready rather than having everything all at once. You gave the analogy of Word and
right.
You know, you just want to have an open page that you can do some typing in and just deal with that.
Yep.
So I'm just wondering, when you are looking at a body of knowledge or you're exploring things with other people and they want to learn about things, to the extent to which you can make the offering such that there is an opportunity for people to build on their own learning in a way that they're comfortable with. And while you don't want to sort of necessarily get into a rigorous, rigid pattern, and which is very much a power play in some ways, it's about reflecting on ways to introduce things so that people can build in a comfortable environment. So, well, it might be okay to say every page is the home page, but really, if they don't offer the same level of comfort for a person who's just starting to explore something, then by default there will sort of be some home pages.
Yeah.
They would want to select themselves. So I'm just wondering how you can help somebody explore a new area without being too much of a prescriptive type, you know, supporter, and to have a level of structure that helps people with comfort.
Yeah, I really, really like the nuance in that conversation. Because there's still more than one start page on the model you just described, but there's also depth in the knowledge resource, a recognition that not everything is at the same level. The two best words in a learning network are the words read more, and the sort of thing that will draw people deeper, but also things like more faceted searches, more directed searches, will also draw you in deeper. I'm not going to stand here and sketch a theory of multi-level distributed knowledge webs, because that's a discipline that's yet to be properly invented. But the comments that you've just made are the steps that need to be taken on the way to such a theory, and are definitely worth exploring further. I think, and so I think that with those observations, this is an excellent time for a break. And then after we come back, I might talk about blogs, or if you want to go another way, I can do that too. We're working loosely on the topic of knowledge, the new learner, and maybe we'll even talk about learning objects, although if you've followed what we've said so far, you're seeing learning objects, properly so-called, becoming less and less relevant, aren't you? So let's take our break now, and we'll come back. When?
Oh, 20 minutes.
20 minutes, and I'll give us 5 minutes to talk before lunch. Just kidding. Bye, everyone on the tape. I hope I didn't wander too far away.